Around the room and have people introduce themselves. Let's start with members of the advisory council. Start with you, Carlton.
Oh, sure. Carlton Christensen with Salt Lake County.
Thank you.
I'm Jeff Richards. I represent Mike McCrory for direction.
Right.
Chris Montague. I'm the alternate for Dave Littlemore, who's asked me to come and sit in on this meeting.
I'm Dan Tunnell from Twilla County, and I have a spot on my nose.
I'm Jake Vanderlaan, Division of Water Quality.
Don Leonard, representing the aquaculture industry. I'm with the brine shrimp industry.
Sorry.
I missed you.
Laura Brennan with Forestry Fire and State Lands.
Leland Myers, I'm with the sewer people.
Jeff Scott, Hawkeye County.
Ryan Tangy, I'm here and representing Todd Bingham.
Randy Elliott, Davis County.
Let's go over here.
Jamie Barnes, Forestry Fire and State Lands.
Laura Olt, Forestry Fire and State Lands.
Brian Holland, also from Forestry Fire and State Lands.
Ryan Gordy, Cargill.
Bill Ratcliffe, Cargill.
Anna Bill, the Nature Conservancy. Mika Roundy, Davis County Community and Economic Development and Great Salt Lake Bird Festival.
Deb Drain, Great Salt Lake Audubon.
Lori Roman, Salt Institute.
Will Nixon, Salt Institute.
Ella Thompson, National Audubon Society.
Heidi Roman, National Audubon Society.
Marcel Shoup, National Audubon.
Tom Tripp, U.S. Magnesium.
Kevin Lamar, PRN.
Karen Strackley, Blue Voters.
Dan Kramer, Division of Wildlife Resources.
Ariel Palms, Western Resource Advocates.
Thane Clark,
One Calm Business.
Joe Abbasi, Compass Mineral.
Des Barker, Compass Mineral.
Jack Gray with the Great Salt Lake Alliance.
Back to you, Dan.
Back.
Oh, Mondo for Sewer District.
Tim?
Tim Hawks, Brine Shrimp.
Standing?
Dave Hatch, Central Davis.
Jill Jones, Central Davis. I want to welcome you all here. Come see us today, so thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Brian Nicholson, SWCA, Environmental Consultant.
Thank you. Jill stole my thunder a little bit. We owe a great debt of gratitude to Jill, who's General Manager of Central Davis Sewer District, for hosting us today. And thank you all for coming. It's always great to have a good turnout. I'm going to assume that's a good thing. You should all have received an agenda. We did have a lunch provided. Please help yourselves. We do have a quorum with 10 of 11 members represented. We'll launch right into our agenda, starting with reports and discussions on council projects. Let me give a brief introduction. Last year, the council was having a rigorous discussion about the low lake elevation. There was significant focus in that conversation about air quality impacts. One of our council members, after we went on talking about the air quality impacts for a while, made a note that we were spending more time discussing symptoms than we were discussing solutions, and that we should be focusing on solutions. Thank you, Jeff. I'll give you attribution for getting us on the right track there. The question then focused on solutions and how we should get there, and Dave Livermore of the Nature Conservancy made a recommendation. He suggested that we develop a suite of options to address lake elevation. Someone else used a different terminology, called it a menu of strategies to get water to Great Salt Lake, and the council unanimously agreed to undertake that project. We raised some money thanks to the Nature Conservancy, Salt Lake County, and Great Salt Lake Brine Shrimp Cooperative. We retained SWCA Consulting as project manager for the project, and we started a process. The result is a draft report. That draft report... The draft report was emailed in draft form to council members on Friday. I have a hard copy for council members today, and I'm given the number of people here, I don't have enough for everyone. So when we pass them out to the rest of the group, let's maybe go every other one so people can look on over each other's shoulders. We will email a copy of this draft report to each of you who signed the sign-in attendance register for the meeting today. So make sure you have an email address on that register. I'll give you a minute to get those. So there is a slight difference in what was emailed out on Friday and what you received today. One of the strategies on what was emailed out Friday didn't have a number on it. So you had a total of 65. By putting a number on that strategy, it expanded the other numbers and changed them, so we now have 66 strategies. It was there all the time, it was just not numbered. Let me ask you to turn to page one, which is going to be the fifth page in, fifth sheet of paper in, to talk about what this project is and what it isn't. You'll find the introduction page. Here, you look over my shoulder. So you have the introduction page, are we there? I'm going to read through much of this introduction page because it clarifies what we're doing. This document is intended to facilitate a discussion of potential strategies to maintain and or increase the surface elevation, that is, the water levels of Great Salt Lake. So I focus on the documents intended to facilitate a discussion. The Great Salt Lake Advisory Council commissioned this report because Great Salt Lake water levels are in long-term decline. I had someone say, well, gee, we had such a wet winter, it's not an issue anymore, right? Well, you all know where the line's going. It zigzags, but it goes zigzags down more than it zigzags up. So there is a long-term decline in the levels of the Great Salt Lake. The second paragraph, the strategies here consist of a wide range of coordination, environmental, legal, operational, policy, and structural practices. So we had to divide these up into different categories, and you could argue about where one belongs, but the important thing is they're all on the list, right? The strategies included in this document comprise submissions from a wide range of individuals and organizations. So that's important to note. These strategies were generated by you, by the general public, by organizations, by conservation interests, water users, water suppliers, state and local governments, industry and commercial interests, non-governmental organizations, and members of the general public. So it was an attempt to gather and compile suggestions from the general public. Strategies were solicited and submitted anonymously or without attribution. We wanted to encourage submission of as many strategies and ideas as possible. Although the list of strategies is by no means exhaustive, it reflects an attempt to compile a wide range of strategic options. Finally, the fourth paragraph. No ranking or prioritization was completed as part of the compilation process. Inclusion in this document does not constitute an endorsement of any individual strategy by the Advisory Council or its members. Again, it's a compilation of submissions from the public. The council members haven't had a chance to read it and review it, and we haven't determined whether we'll use it to facilitate discussion or whether we may go beyond that to actually become an advocate of ideas. So any questions about the purpose, the scope, the introduction? I'd ask you to turn over a few more pages to page 9. That's where the water supply strategies begin. I'll just read the first sentence. This section represents 66 strategies with potential to maintain or increase the surface elevation of Great Salt Lake. I'll make a parenthetical comment here. When we started this process and first met with SWCA, they proposed coming up with 20 strategies. And we decided that we'd push the envelope a little bit and tell them they needed to come up with 40. And the fact that there's 66 in here, I recognize there's some overlap. Some of them talk about the same concepts. But we're really pleased that people are willing to take the time and make those submissions. So with that introduction and having stolen most of Brian's thunder, I'll call on Brian Nicholson of SWCA to give a brief summary of the report. Well, then we'll go to some Q&A and then discussion.
Nice day,
Steve.
Yes. Sure.
Do you need a
clicker?
Go ahead,
Chair. Go. I can stand. I need to deal with Biden quicker anyway.
Okay.
Well, first of all, Don and the members of the council, thank you very much for the opportunity to present the results of this report. And also, I'd like to not only acknowledge the very bright group of people that have gathered in this room, but also acknowledge that SWCA did not do this alone. We received, as Don said, a lot of great ideas, a lot of interesting strategies from a lot of different people, and I'll get into a little bit more detail about that later on. So really, this is acknowledgement of all of those people who assisted with this project, and what SWCA did was really synthesize that information. As Don alluded to, and many of you have seen, this is the long-term hydrograph of the Great Salt Lake. This is something, maybe it's just because I've read the Great Salt Lake Management Plan so many times, that line really stands out to me when I see it. And while there's no, it does go back to 1858, and I want you to know that this portion of the graph is really based on observation. Based on observations of people who were familiar with the lake and who worked on the lake at that time. At some point in time, and I'm not even sure when the salt air gauge starts, but this is the salt air gauge. The right-hand side of the gauge is actual, our graph is actual gauge data. Today we are, I checked the gauge, we are at 4194.79. Okay, so we are down here. There's no trend line, there's no average by decade, but it looks like there's a long-term declining trend to this graph. This map is also included in the report, and if you look at how the Great Salt Lake is exhibited here, the blue polygon, you've got to wonder that that's probably not 4194.79. Okay, so I wanted to point that out. And then I also wanted to point out that the change in volume of the lake really has an effect on the footprint of the lake. You can imagine a system with steep banks. As the volume goes down, the footprint wouldn't change, but for such a shallow, broad basin, you start reducing the volume, and the footprint, the area of that lake really, really declines. The other thing to illustrate in this picture are the three major basins. On the east side of the lake, the West Desert Basin here, and I've got some numbers up on top, which may be a little hard to read, but just so you know, the Bear River Basin contributes approximately a third of the water to the Great Salt Lake. The Weber River Basin, the Jordan River Basin, and the West Desert Basin contribute about a third. And then direct precipitation on the lake itself contributes about a third. So when talking about strategies, I think it's important to understand the context of where the water is coming from, because that might affect the strategies and how they might be implemented or just assessed. And then finally, within each of these basins, Division of Water Resources has modeled things like total basin yield. They've modeled depletions, agricultural depletions, municipal industrial depletions, other depletions, transfers out of the basin, things like that. So you can work backwards from these numbers right here, kind of illustrate the flow to the Great Salt Lake, to get to what all the depletions are, and eventually you work yourself back to what the yield of each basin is. So to acquire, to obtain all of this information, we emailed more than 150 organizations and individuals. We received responses from, one could say, 20 different entities. Some of those are individuals, but many of those were groups of individuals associated with a particular organization, particular industry. And then finally, as Don said, we came up with 66 strategies. And we did a little bit of consolidation. There were a few that were very similar that we lumped together, but for the most part, we really didn't change much either. So we took what people provided us. So also, as Don said, they will remain anonymous. There's no prioritization. I heard on the radio today that chunk of Antarctica finally fell off. No one submitted a strategy to somehow harness, wrangle that large iceberg and bring it here to the Great Salt Lake. But if you had, it probably would have stayed in the document. Okay? And then finally, that's kind of what I have my notes screen about those strategies. So associated with each of the strategies, we have categories, we have a description, we have the applicability to the Great Salt Lake, and we threw that in there because, take for example, what's been going on with Mono Lake. We tried to capture that kind of concept, what has happened over the years with Mono Lake, and leave it kind of general in the description, but then bring it into, you know, how would the legal and legislative work that was done in California apply to Salt Lake, the Great Salt Lake in Utah. So that's what applicability to Great Salt Lake is. And then we recognize that there are potential limitations to a lot of these strategies. So we included a section in the brief strategy on the potential limitations. Here are our strategies. Coordination. And this is essentially planning, additional research, and probably equally as important, additional communication. Environmental includes modification of environmental factors, and I'll give some examples of that. Legal, so any new or modifications of existing laws that would affect how water is owned, managed, or controlled. Operational, so how do various industries perform their day-to-day tasks and use water. Policy is similar to legal, but more of an applied sense. So how are the laws applied? And then finally, structural, construction, engineering, pipelines, things like that. Don asked me to provide some examples for people of some of the strategies that fall into each of these categories. I will do that. For coordination, if you want to turn to strategy number 4, a complete analysis of the public health effects of the exposed sediments around Great Salt Lake. So again, this is kind of a research-based question. What additional information do we need to be able to coordinate among stakeholders and other members of the community? Another example of coordination, create and empower basin councils. So the goal in creating a basin council is to optimize and balance competing demands for water across a watershed. And it was noted by the person or group that submitted this that Utahns tend to embrace more collaborative approaches to dealing with these kinds of issues. Some examples of environmental. Number 15, decrease reservoir evaporation. And number 17, implement vegetation control around Great Salt Lake. We have a lot of reservoirs in Utah. We have estimates for how much evaporation is lost at those reservoirs. And there are a variety of solutions for reducing evaporation. Similarly, we have quite an issue with things like with plants like tamarisk, Russian olive, other phreatophytes that transpire a lot of water. So what would the effect be of implementing vegetation control around the Great Salt Lake that got rid of some of these plants that transpire a lot of water? Number 24. Legislation to set minimum in-stream flows for lake levels. So this is something that could occur in the Utah State Legislature, and they could pass legislation that does exactly that. Set in-stream flows for tributaries, or set some kind of conservation lake level. Another example of legal, number 30, statutory reservation of unappropriated waters. So under Utah Code, 73-6-1, the governor can, by proclamation, reserve unappropriated waters in any source for appropriation and can hold water for future uses. I'll jump ahead a little bit to potential limitations. I think a lot of us recognize that the vast majority of Utah's water is already appropriated. Operational. Number 43, restrict Great Salt Lake industries in dry years or based on elevations. So what would that mean for industry if, when the lake is at a certain level, they were only allowed to divert a portion of their water right? Another example, number 46, limit water reuse. And I think here the concern is that there is obviously water that gets delivered to treatment facilities. If it gets sent back upslope for reuse, the water, once it's treated, is no longer going to the Great Salt Lake, like it would have in the past. Okay. Policy, number 55. Increased treatment and effluent standards at public sewage treatment plants. So here, the point is that type 1 and type 2 effluent are being used for municipal and agricultural purposes. If the standards for treatment were raised, could more water be diverted back into the Great Salt Lake? Another example, 56, permanently abandoned the Bear River project. Again, no value judgment here. These are just the strategies that were submitted. And then finally, structural. Reducing evaporation by diking areas of the Great Salt Lake. I think if you go back to that map of the Great Salt Lake and you see what happens with a loss of volume, what if we dike areas of Great Salt Lake in certain locations to keep water, maybe along the fringes of the lake, maybe to support certain habitats of the lake. Also, the dikes themselves could be built in a way to reduce wind, and wind is one of the primary factors in evaporation. So that was number 64. And then also, use groundwater aquifers along the Wasatch Front. Okay, 65. This is, well, instead of building new reservoirs that are subject to evaporation, why not pump that water into the ground and store it there to reduce evaporation? So, Don, do you want me to do any more? I think we've saturated that, so to speak.
Well, let's...
This is the next slide. This is the, excuse me, I'll reach across here.
Where's my water go?
I gave you some specific examples. These are general themes that kind of came up across the 66 different strategies. Water rights transfers, water conservation, increased storage, planning, economic incentives, vegetation management, diversion of new sources, water use efficiency, and management flexibility. I'll open it up to the crowd, the group. Are there any that you have questions of about, I'm going to provide an example. Those, how's that, since we're running a little late on time and have another report to get to.
Jeff.
What would fall under diversion of new resources?
Diversion of new resources.
Yeah, the examples that I gave were 14 and 61. 14 is groundwater mining. And then 61 is additional diversions from the Colorado River system. Possibly the headwaters through Strawberry and the Central Utah Project, as far-fetched as the Lake Powell Pipeline, and instead of, you know, keeping that water down in Washington County, bringing it up along I-15 to Great Salt Lake.
Other questions?
Okay. And the last slide, as I alluded to before, potential limitations. I think we can't deny that there are limitations associated with many, if not all, of these opportunities, or else they probably would have been implemented before. So I think across the board, the most significant limitation, or the one that was brought up most frequently, was, well, if we make all these conservation or water gains upslope or in the headwaters of the watershed of the basin, how do we ensure that they actually get to the lake? How do we ensure that they're not going to be taken by other water rights holders? How do we make sure they're not going to be used by vegetation? How do we make sure that it's not going to be evaporated? And then other potential limitations, cost, time, leadership, litigation, and then development of new processes and procedures to actually get some of these strategies done. And that should be it.
Thank you, Brian. Any other questions from council members first? Questions from anyone else in attendance? We covered the water club, Brian.
Is the idea that we're just going to present this to who?
That's next question. That's the next topic on the agenda.
What that may lead to my question is, like, is there a process where we synthesize or analyze what ones we feel have merit or?
Well, let's jump to that item on the agenda, discussion of the report and next steps on the water supply for Great Salt Lake. You recall our objective in launching the project was, as I read from the introduction, to facilitate a discussion, to try to gather strategies, create a menu or a suite, and at that time we didn't opine, if you will, on what in addition to that we might do with this report. So we can talk about whether we want to go through a ranking process, a prioritization process, whether we want to publish it, whether we want to advocate it, or just put it out there for discussion. I think that's the big question. I have some recommendations, but I'd love to hear what people think. Leland.
You know, a number of these items are being included in the state water strategies. It's just being completed. So there are some of these that are already going to be included in that document. There are also some of these that are either going to make someone or some group of people very, very mad, or, you know, and what you're afraid of is that discounts the document. So, you know, the disclaimer is that we're just throwing out all these ideas. If we want to publish reports saying, these are all the ideas that we can come up with, but we ought to be thinking about what we're going to do to make sure some of these happen. I don't think that's a bad idea, but I mean, there's some of those. I mean, you throw some of those out to the agricultural community, and you're going to be beat down so fast at the legislature. Anywhere else you want to do it, you won't be able to stand it.
Other comments, council members? Carlton?
Well, I think at some point, I mean, the document pretty much is a public document. I mean, it's not necessarily an endorsed document, but I think at some point we want to come to a point where we've narrowed down maybe some recommendations, because I'm a little fearful, along with the idea of some of them could be alarming, that if we don't take at least a position on what we think ought to be the areas of focus, that this ends up being, even though it's clearly defined in the introduction that they're just ideas, it'll take a life of its own on, and it'll be hard to explain very effectively that we were just asking for, you know, ideas, which I thought was a good process. I just think we have to take it a little step further, otherwise we'll have a wild cat on our hands.
Other comments? Jeff? Or?
No, I agree with what Carlton said. I think, you know, because these were all ideas that came in, and I think a lot of these have merit, some of them are overlapping. I think we need to go through and analyze, maybe prioritize and take ownership over the ones that we think have merit, and then take that on the next step.
Other thoughts from?
Wait, I have one more.
Sure. Maybe.
Because there are some of these that are incorporated in the state water strategy, you know, items that are in here, maybe we ought to look at strategy as compared to this and find out which common ones are there. Because those are going to go forward to the governor. And so if we identify those, we can then say these are included where there's commonality between the two documents.
Are there gaps in the document? Are we missing important, valuable, meaningful items?
None that I can think of.
Okay. Any comments from other attendees who are not members of council? Tom.
I find this an ironic discussion. In 1984, I sat in a council like this, we were talking exactly the opposite. How can we get the lake level down? I only bring that comment up. These are all perhaps got some merit, every one of them. But the climate changes that happen can override every single one of those ideas in either direction. Not to discourage anybody.
Well taken, Tom. Other comments?
There was some discussion of icebergs. I wonder.
Other comments? I've never heard this group so quiet. Let me throw a couple of ideas out of what we might do as a council. I think we're dealing with a really long-term issue, really long-term. And so the speed of how we act isn't as important as the direction that we act, I think. And so I would suggest, and we got pretty good response, but we had 132 people that got our email who didn't respond. I would suggest maybe there are some other ideas, and now that they see the format and the substance and how it's treated, and that in fact we're not throwing names under the bus, perhaps we give them a couple, we reopen, give them a couple more weeks, gather some more, see if there are any others that we ought to be adding to the list. People can make a comment if they think something's inaccurate too, if we want to go that far. And then if we did that for the next couple of weeks in July, have SWCA compile it into the second version of the draft, distribute it to members, we could do some informal polls to determine if there is some low-hanging fruit, to see if there's general consensus. As I look through the 66, I mean, personally, I see quite a few of them I could support. I see some that I would oppose, and I see some on which I'm neutral or don't understand, really. And so we could come back and try to do what Leland says, find some that are already moving, find low-hanging fruit. One area I'd particularly like to look at would be these limitations on getting water to the lake. There's so many of these, when you read the limitation statement, it says, even if you accomplish this, it doesn't get water to the lake. And maybe a role we could consider and discuss at a future meeting is trying to identify those changes that would help facilitate actually getting water to the lake. Doesn't matter how much you conserve upstream, if none of it gets to the lake, you don't achieve your purpose. So those are some areas. Then one final area, we might be able to identify specific strategies we're interested in, but we don't understand, and we could invite people to come and educate us a little bit at future meetings. Since this is a long-term process and long-term project. And then at that point in time, we could decide, do we want to try and build consensus or let other groups go ahead and play that role. I'll remind you that in 2012, we issued the economic study of economic impacts from Great Salt Lake. We didn't formally present it or publish it or advocate it. We just put it out there as here's the facts. And yet, I dare say most of the people in this room have quoted that report in some way or another or referenced it. And so you don't need to be an advocate to have an impact. I think that economic report had a significant impact in raising the dialogue and the focus and the interest of some people who weren't that interested in the lake before, but who are now. I think the same thing happened with our lake health report. We didn't take that report and go out and start advocating how you fill in the gaps and where there are problems and where there aren't, but other people did. And we use the credibility of our group, because we're not ranging out there on the far ends of issues, the credibility of our group to prepare and put out on the table credible, substantive information that other people have been able to act upon, much to the benefit of the Great Salt Lake. And so we could view this the same way. We're providing a piece of the puzzle that people can use. And I'd suggest deferring the conversation as to whether we advocate any or all for a future meeting to try and get it complete. So that's thoughts I would have.
So moved.
Well, people beat it down a little bit first, Leland.
Still moved.
So moved. Is there a second?
I would second that.
Thank you, Jeff. Let's talk about it. You're okay with all those elements, timeline, et cetera?
I think it's a good idea to get it out there again and get some more ideas. And then once it does come back, if there are more ideas, great. And then now we can look at prioritizing them. House and see which ones can be implemented, and which simply because of legal reasons or feasibility just can't, and they will work.
Okay, other comments? Chris?
What you said right at the beginning about, you know, we may be able to implement these strategies and make all sorts of changes or legal or policy or save actual water, but it would be good to know if there's a fatal flaw in getting that water all the way to the lake. And that should be one of the filters that, that somebody prioritizes. It's a great strategy, it saves water. Water doesn't quite make it all the way to the lake.
You know that problem here.
Other comments?
Maybe what we also want to consider is developing a set of criteria as we go through these, because there's some of these things that might be good ideas, but they're just sort of not within our framework of being able to make a change in that direction, and others we can. And so maybe we ought to develop a set of criteria we can use to rank these.
To evaluate them.
Which, you know, Chris is probably one of those. You know, if there's no water at the end of this,
what's the point? Good suggestion. Probably.
You know, along that same line, I think if sort of having it there in and of itself has its value, like the other studies that you did, maybe even if there weren't sort of a position taking on them, it might guide us in selecting if there's some stuff that we want to do more research on, because it may have a broader merit component to it. Because the information would, inform the stakeholders that could actually effectuate the change about what the long-term benefit would be and what sort of the parameters are. I mean, often you talk about it, but the research itself isn't actually there.
Good point. Other comments? Dan.
Looks like there's probably the biggest problem we have, really, is we had one good water year in a row. And the second one is the Bear River Project. If you don't have more good weather years, it's going to dry up quicker than they can grab it. So I think those are kind of colliding there. The groundwater issue, if you don't have groundwater, no one's farming. The vegetation issue with the Phragmites and the Russian olive trees and whatever else that was. There's tons of them out there, acres and acres of them suckers. So you really got to do something. It's you're damned if you do and don't, but you can't just let it slide. It's got to be more maybe public. Conservation, we're just not doing enough. And I've said it before, that Capitol Grounds is not a good conservation area to pick. It's so green and lush. And they water quite a bit, so we need to rethink practices with conservation, with school districts, government. But if we wait too long, you're not going to have it, because if Bear River goes through before the winter, climate change is in our favor as far as water goes. We're going to lose it.
I think most of the suggestions you made are found in here somewhere, but not all of them. And if I have to choose between being damned if I do and damned if I don't, I think I'll choose to be damned if I do. But I think we should launch forward. So, good comments. Chris?
As far as kind of doing informal or anonymous ranking by the council, I think that's a good idea, but the ranking or the strategy we're, I think, looking for is the one that everybody else chooses, rather than, you know, this council saying this is the top five, and these are the ones we need to go after. There, somehow we have to factor in that we can choose whatever we want, but if nobody else is interested in it and participating in the broader process, then we haven't contributed as much as we could. And then the role of the, if we could somehow figure that out, not just how we rank them, but the public and all the organizations and industry rank them, then we could be advocates for exploring that that strategy or whatever. But how to slip from having the council, you know, be the ultimate say on what gets ranked or not, and somehow including feedback on what do any of these interest some kind of greater constituency that would make it possible, because we could choose five that nobody else wants to really pick up and work on.
How would you propose doing that?
I didn't think that far.
Well, let's think about that, because I think that, you know, one of the things we tried to do purposely from the beginning was actually go overboard on making sure public input was provided in this list. We didn't send out an email just to council members and say, tell us what you think we should be doing. We send out an email to everyone we could think of and say, will you tell us what you think we should be doing? And so, in essence, the first step was, this is a compilation of what came from the public. And I think that was the right thing to do, and I think we should continue to be open in that way. But at some point in time, there is a step in the process where we have a specific statutory duty. We've launched this project, and we need to do some internal evaluation to see if there's a role for us to play. I don't have a problem when we open it up for 2 weeks for more submissions to open it up and allow people to send in whatever they want, and send in their comic books or their, you know, their evaluation or comments or edits. I think we're open to whatever people want to say. At the end of the day, our project is to compile a list of strategies that at least one person in the world agrees with, you know, the person who submitted it. And I think we're well down that track. Like I said, I'm delighted that we got 66 submissions. And I'm hoping we get another 66 in the next 2 weeks, although I know that's, you know, we've already picked a low-hanging fruit here. But so I don't disagree with you. I just think it's kind of a step at a time. Leland.
You know, I agree with this resubmitting it out to people, let people look at it. But perhaps we ought to look at who didn't get any submissions in, too. For instance, I know there's a whole bunch of them in here that deal with agriculture. Did we get any submittals from anybody involved in agriculture? Like the Farm Bureau, the Department of Agriculture?
Since they're anonymous, you're going to have to ask him. He's the one guy.
I'm working over that direction.
He's the one guy you have to torture to get to release the names.
My guess is not many. And so if we resubmit it out, let's make sure we get some people in agriculture to see what's being said so they can then comment on what they think also.
I think that's a good suggestion.
So just broaden who you send it to, not just the same people we sent to before, but look at who maybe boxes Gord in the process of any of these and say include those too.
Well, I think now that you have something for people to react to, the likelihood that they could submit something will be greater because they want their voice to be heard. They've seen that other people's is.
No, I mean, you know, we talked about one of them was to drain Cutler Reservoir, you know. And that's, again, did Rocky Mountain ever hear this thing? Or otherwise, did Logan? Because they're way off site from what we did. But that's a suggestion in the report. So, you know, they need to be able to see it, they're not just vicariously, because it's on a website somewhere.
Good suggestion.
And then I would also suggest putting the whole report on the website that we have. Posting it up to the website so people can get it there.
All right, clock's ticking. Other comments? We have a motion and a second. We've had some discussion. Any
and I,
further?
I amend my motion to include the discussion.
Okay, we'll do the best job we can at capturing that. Well,
yeah.
Okay, does a second go along with that, Jeff? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Great, unanimous. Thank you all. And you should, as council members, watch for early beginning of August for a 3-week time frame here to plow through this. It's not I mean, you do have to sit down and read it. It's not scannable. And we'll ask for some feedback through those emails. Same to the public. We'll invite all of your input in that process. Okay. Let's go to the next agenda item. This one is another project that the council undertook. In 2011, we determined that what we knew about the Great Salt Lake in terms of science compared to what we need to know was a wide gulf or a gap. And not directly, we set out not to focus money on projects or to help get projects funded, rather to raise the objective of that study that we undertook was to raise the focus of the question of the fact that there was a lot we didn't know about Great Salt Lake. There's a lot of research that needed to be done, and we needed to have more discussion and focus in that area. And so what we agreed to do was to compile a list of research needs, principally to bring focus to those needs, and along the way to determine if we might have some influence on dollars chasing projects. And so we retained SWCA in 2011 to do that project, and in 2012 issued our GSL research database, most of you have seen. Last year, during our discussions about what our work plan should be for 2017, we agreed not to replace that 2012 research database report, but to create a new list of what we need to know. And again, the objective was not so much, and there was some misunderstanding. I got some emails from some scientists who were wanting to know how much money was in the before they made their submittal, how much money was available. And as you know, we have no budget. There's no money available. There's only money we can raise by knocking on doors. And thankfully, on the research database, Salt Lake County opened the door and helped fund this. So it's not an attempt to raise research dollars or fund research projects. It's a more simple, straightforward update. A lot has happened in 5 years, and we realize there's more we don't know. And so we did a similar approach where we sent out emails, asked people to make submissions, and then we did have an informal ranking process here. And I apologize again, I didn't expect nearly this many people. I'm gonna go ahead, I won't take one. But here, this again is a draft report. Entitled Great Salt Lake Research Topics Database. I'm going to ask Brian to give us a brief summary or introduction, and with an emphasis on the word brief. Say less than 5 minutes.
Huh? Take all the time you want, as long as it's under 5 minutes.
Sure. We will send this out with email of anybody who signed our register today. So. Who hasn't seen that yet and got their signature on it? Where is it? Jill, we get past it. Yeah, Jake, get it around. And before you leave, make sure your name's on there with your email. We'll give you both these documents and include you on the future submissions. Okay, Brian, fire away.
Okay. So we used a similar email strategy to what we did in 2011. And we took that original list, we added to it. We took off names of people who were no longer involved in the Great Salt Lake or maybe no longer in state, added new names, new people, as people have backfilled for certain jobs, and came up with a list of about, I think I counted, 116 researchers, managers, and other stakeholders. We received 20 respondents, and I want to acknowledge that most of those were from individuals, but there were a few that were from groups of people. And then all told, 44 specific research topics. And then as part of this process, we combined ones that were relatively close in content, description, objectives, things like that. So who are our respondents? There is a mix of federal, state, private, conservation, high amount of academic, and a few people who just didn't answer the question or just said other and didn't feel like they fell into any of those categories. So what does 10% mean? Two, five, two, one, two, and I think there's seven. Does that add up?
Eight.
And then in terms of what they felt, what the respondents felt their function was, the majority were active research folks. So either researchers at academic institutions or state or federal agencies doing research on the lake. Once we compiled the kind of synthesized list, we gave it to the review team, which consisted of five members, representatives from Water Quality, Wildlife Resources, Forest Fire and State Lands, the current chair of the council and the past chair of the council. And they used this 0 to 5 scoring system to rank each research topic based off of these three questions. And these are the same questions that we used in 2011. So how does this research answer critical questions related to permitting? How does it answer questions about scientific, or how does it answer scientific questions about processes? And then finally, is there a direct influence from the research on improvement or management of the lake? So each of the topics was scored. We add those together to get a final score for each topic. The highest ranking topics were supporting and developing continued development of the integrated water resource model, nutrient balance research for the Great Salt Lake, additional information or new research, ongoing research regarding Great Salt Lake benthic communities and ecology, and then an evaluation of Great Salt Lake ecological stressors. Some other highly ranked topics included developing a water budget for Great Salt Lake wetlands, looking at the effects of groundwater withdrawals on Great Salt Lake wetlands, looking at the effects of declining Great Salt Lake elevation on air quality, and this was one of the ones that was also included in 2011. That one stands out to me. I think there were probably some other repeats from 2011 or ones that are still on the 2011 list that just didn't get addressed over the last 5 years. Looking at a new two-way flow algorithm now that the breach has been implemented. And then finally, ecological relationships between the dynamic hydrologic cycle and wildlife habitat. I think that is, yes, that is it. So those highly ranked topics cover probably the top third of the topics, and there are other medium and low ranked topics also.
Thank you, Brian. Questions by council members? Carlton.
As you review the comparisons between, has there been any huge shifts in sort of that prioritization or nature of the research that you're seeing?
What are you thinking? I think there was a greater focus this time around on water quality. That's a layman's view.
I think a lot of the ones that we had proposed earlier were immediate needs. And so there are a lot of projects that were completed that were addressing immediate questions and immediate needs. And I think these tend to focus on longer term objectives. So that you can make decisions, but if you go back to the slide with the priority ones on it, each one of these, the IWRM, we need to get it finalized, and then we need to get it populated, and then be able to be utilized, and it functions to support developing a nutrient balance for the Great Salt Lake, and those are very important from a standpoint of permitting and also function of the lake. So those kind of priorities became, because they incorporate a lot more than just one question.
This is really stupid, but I skipped my biology class that day and went with my friends, but what's benthic ecology?
Little things.
That's the stuff that lives on the bottom.
Little things.
Thank you.
We're working our way down the water column here. Start at the surface, now we gotta plunge to the bottom.
Thank you.
Good question. Other questions or comments by council members? Dan?
Somewhere in there, are we gonna have something that says something about, really, do we want Bear River Water Project?
Well, let's, mind if I answer?
No, go ahead, Liz.
That's gonna be the integrated water resource model. Once you show the effects of it and what else takes place, if you don't find other conservation methods, then you show what's gonna happen to the lake on a long-term basis with the model. And so we need the model to be able to draw those conclusions out, to be able to say, okay, we believe, and then the we believe would include issues related to the Bear River Project. But if you say, we just don't like it, but if we have a we believe, and then we have modeling indications to what that impact is, you know, so if you do the Bear River Project and you say no conservation, well, that would be a significantly different than if you say Bear River Project, but with conservation. And with sufficient conservation, maybe the Bear River Project is out so far or never. But you've got to look at the modeling. And when you take into account ag, and a third of the water comes out of the Bear River system, and the fact that even though a third of it comes there, that's the biggest point where you get more water. And if you find ways to do conservation in agriculture to send more downstream, it's a win-win situation. You don't need the project, and you can get more into the lake from the ag side. So those are all real advantages that can be looked at, but the model's gonna help us define those advantages.
Chris?
Just a quick question on the board, little last one on the entire list. Digital availability of research and studies, is that just wasn't a very important topic to the
I think if you look to some people that's really important, but if you look at the judging criteria, the three criteria, it didn't do well in based on how that helps managers or how that determines permitting or other kinds of decisions. So it's a nice to know, and it's an efficiency for data, but it doesn't really address those three criteria. So numerically, and the ranking system, you didn't just give each one number, you gave them a number based on each criteria, and so there's an average. It was a little more complicated than Brian explained. So that's why it ended up bad. Not because it's a bad idea, it's just out of all these ideas, it was fared the least in comparison to the criteria.
Can I put one other thing else on it? 10 years ago, maybe even 12, we took Wally Gwynn's whole database that he had. We compiled a whole bunch of other reports, and at Central Davis, we created with that an index of all those reports with keyword. And the idea was we were gonna publish that on the internet. What happened, though, is we ran into copyright issues. And all of the journal articles are copyrighted by somebody, and they're available on somebody's research database, which precludes us from being able to publish it to ours. So the only ones we'd be able to publish on a database that's available are ones that we have right to publish. So they'd be uncopyrighted or reports that were directly written for one of the governmental entities. You could do that, but it's not going to be as robust as you would want the database if you're really trying to establish a database.
Laura.
I believe the tech team, this was a number of years ago, had a grant that created what Leland's talking about online with journal articles based at Utah State. So I think the framework's there, but there was never any money to keep said project going. So I think it wouldn't be too hard, it would just cost some ongoing dollars to house that stuff.
And you can capture the reference to the articles, that's what they were doing. Mm-hmm. But not the article.
And they were able
but that's something.
Yeah, that's something. And they were able, somehow I think they captured some of it because they had subscriptions.
When the scientists, the 120 or whoever, or the respondents to the query out there, there wasn't much mention probably from the scientific community that they think that this is important, that they can share this stuff. I assume that it's just didn't rise in the process as well as the scoring.
I think that's accurate as well. Other comments by members? You want a recommendation or do you?
can make a motion if you want.
Far away, Leland.
I make the motion that we adopt the research database as presented and make it a living document, so if something comes up, we can bring it in and then incorporate it into this as time goes on.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Second, Carlton. Thank you. Any debate or discussion? All in favor say, oh, Dan.
I just have one little thing. I went to one of the water management meeting things and I asked a question about how long it takes to take agriculture's, if you sell your water, how long it takes it to get out of the system. And the answer was between 4 to 40 years. And the question was, why did I ask that question? And the answer was because Parley Coon's farm is now Smith's. Art Flangus is now a high-rise apartment, and Billy Newton's is now a subdivision. But you take all that water that they used to use, it's not being used. So it takes 4 to 40 years. That makes it so bogus that you have this umbrella for agriculture when it's not an actual figure. So that, I'm not saying we have to look at it really hard, but it just needs to be cleared up.
That makes it sound like a long-term project, Dan.
It does. And Wally Gwynn won't do it.
Okay, other comments or discussion on the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Any abstentions? It's unanimous. I particularly like the part about making a living document. But again, as with our prior research database, the principal focus was to raise in people's minds the fact that there's still much to be done from a scientific nature about Great Salt Lake. So, and Carlton, thank you very much for the financial contribution to that. And Brian, where'd Brian go?
Sorry.
Thank you for the work on that project. Next item on the agenda is our public comment. Every meeting we leave time open for the public. How many people, by raise of hand, want to make a comment? We'll divide the time by that number of people and just sit here for 10 minutes.
Did we miss the item you are in?
Oh, yeah. We did. I was watching the clock, Leland.
Okay, I'm sorry. I can retract that statement.
Yeah, I thought we were on schedule. We're behind. Leland, I think, really accurately summarized the importance of the IWRM. The Advisory Council was there at the birth, recommending the idea, working hand-in-hand with Forestry, Fire, and State Lands to get it supported, to get it funded to the tune of $400,000 by the legislature over 2 years. And now we're at the point where you saw from the research database, that we need to bring it home and make sure that it's usable and effective. And so we've asked Jeff not to come and tell us all the background and the history, we've been through that, but to talk about the future scope. Where are we going and what do we need? And we'll ask you to do that efficiently.
Yes, I will.
Thanks, Jeff.
So to give you some context in terms of where we want to go in the future, I think it's important to give you just a quick, in terms of the need of the project, when this project was initially conceived, we wanted to look at not just the lake itself, we wanted to be able to look at the watershed. How might changes in the watershed affect changes in the lake? And so it was a significant challenge. You know, how do we characterize and understand all those variables that affect inflows to Great Salt Lake and then how the lake responds to them when there is so much uncertainty? There's a lot of physical uncertainty in terms of the hydrology, climate, just facilities, but there's also a lot of policy uncertainty. How do we manage our water? And how do you try to characterize that? And what we did is we can try to incorporate that all into the IWRM model. And we shortened it to Great Salt Lake Integrated Model, so it's just easier to say GSLIM than it is to say all those letters. But when we're looking at all this kind of uncertainty, we talk about the cone of uncertainty. As we look into the future, we get more, as we compound all the variables and uncertainty just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And so a model like this is very helpful as we start to look at scenario planning. And I think it addresses a lot of things that we talked about already today in terms of what ifs, just trying to be able to make decisions that set us on the right trajectory for the future. So we looked at, early on, we identified what's kind of the wish list of variables that we might want to look at, and that was all characterized up front. But in the end, what we really wanted to do was be able to look at, well, what will the lake level and salinity be when we start to look at all these different variables, and then how that affects the comprehensive management plan. So just to give you a quick glimpse of the model itself, we turned this in a few weeks ago to the state. There are five different agencies involved. But what this model lets us do is, from a global setting for the whole watershed, we can look at climate, we can look at the river basin module, there's a lake module, and then a wetlands module. And I'm just gonna blast through this very quickly just to give you an idea of what kind of options there are right now. In terms of climate, the whole model is set up on a 12-kilometer grid pattern, but the model allows you to come in and change the precipitation and temperature globally through the model as we go into the future. If you look at the top here, you can bounce back and forth throughout the model to different modules. But looking at the river basin itself, if you look at just the municipal and industrial controls, how we use water in our urban areas in the state, we can there's a whole variety of different variables that we can adjust. Whether we're using the current or 2010 census data, you can select the governor's office planning, their projections on population growth. You can come in here and make all kinds of adjustments as to how we use water indoors, how we use water outdoors in our landscapes, how we irrigate our landscapes. We look at the ag use. Again, here we've got close to 30 different types of agricultural land uses that you can account for, and how water is used by those different kinds of crops, how we irrigate the water or irrigate all those different landscapes, how the water is used in the undeveloped areas. Bouncing back here, we look at new project and storage. We mentioned the Barrier Pipeline project that was a big component of this. We can turn it on, turn it off, see how that affects. We can put different reservoirs and different river basins up here in the Barrier River watershed to see how that, where we divert the water, how much volume we want to store. This is blank right now. But then how we allocate the water, where are we going to send the water, elsewhere in the watershed, allocations, I guess that's the allocations where we send the water versus where it's stored. But then we can start to, and then we can also look at throughout the watershed, look at all the different reservoirs. How can we, do we want to adjust those reservoir storage volumes? Going over to the lake module, this is very similar to the current USGS water balance model. You've got your initial conditions for the lake, and for the causeways, we've got the new breach incorporated into there. Allows you to make adjustments, see what if scenarios on the size of the breach. We can turn the culvert, well, the culverts are turned off now because they're plugged, but you can go back and open those back up. In terms of the Barrier Bay, Farmington Bay causeways, you can make adjustments there as well. Coming back to here, one of the things that we found was running the entire model takes about 15 minutes for a typical laptop to run the model now, but the lake module by itself only takes a couple minutes. And so we wanted to make it so you didn't have to run the whole watershed if you didn't want to. So what you can do is if you turn the river basin model off, it's using historical data, but you can come in here and say, I want 10% more water coming down out of the rivers, or 10% less, or whatever, however you want to scale that. You can also incorporate other hydrographs into it. So, for example, the National Weather Service during the winter, spring, does their flood forecasting and for the different watersheds. And so you can take those hydrographs and incorporate that into here as kind of a short-term projection as to what the lake might do. Outflows, we can turn the west guys are a pump station on and off, do different things with that. And then the mineral extraction ponds, we kind of aggregated the different evaporation ponds into five different areas around the lake. And you can make adjustments in terms of how big those areas are, how much water is returned back to the lake from those operations. For the wetlands, again, we can adjust, you know, all the different kinds of wetlands, how much water they're using. We can also go in and zero in on different wetland areas. And it's pre-populated with the vegetation types in 2011, but you can come in here and zero out Phragmites, for example, if you wanted to, and see how that affects the water balance. And then in terms of results, there's lots of different options to look at here, where you can look at some of the aggregated results through the watershed, but you can also zero on each of these river sub-basins. These are all built around Division of Water Resources management areas. You can look at the network summary and click on any of these river sub-basins and look at the different hydrographs in different areas throughout the watershed to see what the results are, both in graphical and in tabular form. You can also zero in on each of the sub-areas and here look at just about everything you might want to look at in terms of water, in terms of how much area is currently irrigated by agriculture in that area, how much is it using. M&I, you can look at population, how much water are we using, how much are we irrigating, how much water are we using indoors versus outdoors. Look at your soil moisture balance. Lots of options here to be able to look at a lot of these questions. And then from a lake standpoint, you can look at a lot of these different areas to see, again, how does the water surface elevation fluctuate, water balance, salinity, salt balance, exposed playa at different, for different scenarios. And then you can run the model deterministically, meaning I have a certain scenario I want to do, or you can run it through a Monte Carlo simulation, and where basically the model runs it 1,000 times or whatever you want to prescribe, and then it gives you a result like this to kind of give you an idea of, well, what's our confidence interval that something's going to happen. So in terms of next steps, I think one of the key things that this model provides you with is a tool. There are hundreds of variables that you can come in here and change. And so it's a very complex model, but also a very powerful model. But typically what we do then is, with a model like this, is we go through a scenario planning analysis, where we look at, try to identify, well, what variables is a system most sensitive to? For example, water conservation, or importing more water, or do we transfer more water from one basin to another? You can start to look at what-if scenarios with all these different variables and try to see and try to understand better which ones have the biggest impact on the lake or within the watershed itself. So with our committee, what we try to do is talk about what would rollout of this model look like. We didn't necessarily want to just throw this complex model out into the wind. What we thought would be most helpful is for the state to do a sensitivity analysis, try to understand what drives change in the lake, and then develop and define scenarios illustrating the model function and results. And so this would be based on input that we received throughout the project on what kinds of scenarios people are most interested in, summarize those results into a report that could then be released to the public along with a player version of the model for the public to be able to use as well. And then there would be a period of public comment that we talked about, but then all those comments would go back to the state agencies. And the Division of Water Resources is going to own the model, hold the model. They're going to be the ones who would be doing the maintenance of the model. But we developed some initial protocol procedures for how this model is actually going to be maintained as well. A lot of models just get developed or used and put on a shelf and forgotten about. What we try to do is develop a process for how this model, ideas that come from the public or other stakeholders, how those ideas can be discussed, evaluated, and incorporated into this model. Because really the goal is not for this to be kind of a one-off model. This is version 1.0. The intent is to make this model better. And the model will evolve, but the key is to be able to have a process to be able to continue that. So there's already been a lot of ideas as far as other things that could be made more robust with the model. Of course, data is always the better the data we have, the better results that we have. The more data we have, the better we can characterize how the system operates. So whether that's groundwater use, reservoir operations, incorporating that better, water use, hydraulics, how the water flows between the different bays within the lake, those are all things that we've characterized based on available data, but it could be improved upon with better or more data. And then other capabilities within the model. The model does a salt balance, and we do characterize the salinity between the upper and deep brine layer, but we really don't have enough data to be able to characterize the dynamics between the mixing between those different layers. And so it's really a pure mass balance right now. Urban land use scenarios, right now if you increase population, basically packing the people into the same footprint that we have now. The idea is, obviously, as we develop, hopefully we don't have a whole lot more sprawl, but there's all different kinds of scenarios that can be evaluated there with land planners that could be incorporated here as well. Adding some fixed climate scenarios that water conservancy districts are using or the state's using, adding additional capabilities for groundwater reuse, and tracking how much water could be reused and what the implications there, and then pollutant loading. So there's a lot of different things. I guess this, I'm excited, this is a great foundation for a tool like this. And a lot of the research that we talked about, a lot of the water supply questions that we were talking about, a lot of those things can be evaluated here. But I think, you know, through a scenario planning process where we identify, well, what kinds of objectives do we have? What kinds of decision criteria do we want to use? That helps steer, and then you've got a tool like this to be able to evaluate them. And just to give you an idea of running the model, last fall, when the state was trying to consider, do we open the breach now? Do we wait till the summer? Do we wait till next winter? We ran the model starting having it start in January of 2016. And so we ran the model back in October. And so you can see we're running it looking forward. And what this Monte Carlo simulation does is it took the hydrology that we had from 1987 to 2013 and basically just started the hydrology kind of randomly throughout for all those different years to see, well, how might that affect where the trajectory of the lake. And so you can see here, these dots are the actual water surface elevation for the south arm. It did fantastic, and then we had a great winter with lots of water. And so we started to deviate from the mean, and we're still within some good confidence intervals. But it starts to give you an idea of, okay, well, what kinds of ranges might we see for different types of scenarios. So with that, I talked very fast.
Thank you, Jeff. Any questions?
Well,
go ahead, Leland, and then
the
Joe.
The model will be completed, and the report will be completed in the near future.
The model we turned in.
So you talked about in the report, you're going to have some run some different scenarios.
The documentation we're provided basically documents the model. The rollout report is something that will be done in the coming months.
And when did they anticipate having that done?
Well, I think it's probably a funding issue, right?
Right.
It's probably a three-month process to go to put the model through its all its paces and come up with a report.
Right now, we're looking at the player version, right? We don't have the final version yet. And so that will be, I think, coming in a couple of weeks. But once that's complete, then it's ours. And we don't have any further plans with CH to have their assistance rolling this out to the public. And I think that's something that,
either was overlooked or certainly was not enough, there wasn't enough money budgeted for a rollout to get the information out to the public. And I think that's something that we really need to take into consideration and find some money for to help us roll this out so it's presented in a way that's beneficial to all of us.
Was that proposed in the budget process for the next fiscal year?
No, it was not.
How much do you anticipate needing to do that?
I don't know, Jeff. I would say, just to throw out a number, I don't know, maybe you guys, like 100,000?
I was going to say 1 to 200,000. Again, it comes back to what your objectives are. Our initial thought was that we would do the sensitivity analysis, or somebody who would do the DWR do the sensitivity analysis, and then they would look at different scenarios and just summarize, here's what we think the model's doing. If you wanted to actually roll it into more of an evaluation type thing, where we've got some, you know, ideas that we want to really look at, some scenarios, and we want to really investigate those, then that takes more effort to do that. But I think $100,000 to $200,000 is probably the ballpark of where that would be, including some public comment and all that kind of stuff.
And I think as the Division of Water Resources gets more, or it seems like they're talking more about water planning, this tool could help with water planning. And so I think maybe we could look at partnering more with Water Resources on funding this. It's not just something that Forestry, Fire, and State Lands is responsible for. So Marisa, I saw you in here.
I'm
in talking.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't have Craig's brain though.
You have his credit card.
That's right. Neither one. I wish I had the second one and then this
person. Joe, you've been patient.
We listened to a really good presentation at Tech Team meeting yesterday on a new bathymetric, the LIDAR survey that was done on the lake. Can that be integrated in this fall in the future?
Yeah, actually that was one of our biggest challenges, was there was all these different bathymetry, topography, data sources, and we had to integrate them. And so we have one continuous bathymetry for the entire lake going out even into the West Desert in case the lake ever does go to 4212. All these new source data sources as they come in, the intent with the committee was to, you know, as new data comes up, as people want to look at new things, look at different variables, those are all things that can be incorporated into it.
He indicated there's material differences between the Baskin's USGS bathymetric map and what they revealed last summer when the lake was at its lowest. Some really big changes. They want to do some additional work to go below the water surface.
Yeah, there is no LIDAR data for the lake bed right now. It was only to where the water's edge began, or where the water's edge began in September. So there is no LIDAR data for the bed of the lake yet.
But I mean, it covers the 4190 or 4189, so a good part of the lake bed was covered with that. But that additional work would be valuable.
No, that bathymetry is really foundational to the water balance. You know, how deep is the water for different, when you have different inflows, and that affects the evaporation, and you know, how much water is in the lake, and you know, how much water is moving between different water bodies.
One more question, Leland, and then three more. Really quick, we're on the timeline.
I want to go back to how are we going to get this money to get this completed and rolled out? And I don't know, is that going to be forestry and fire take responsibility or water resources? Do we need to find a way to get to the legislature? What do we need to do to get this remaining done? So I'm looking at agencies to tell me what they think first.
I think it needs to be both of us. It needs to be a partnership. And I think, yes, we need to go to the legislature and ask for money.
I can't make a decision, but I have an idea. Mm-hmm. So I'll talk to Laura about it.
Yeah. Well, can we, by the next meeting, can we get back what that idea is so that we can then say if we need to go lobby people to get the money, let's do it? And I'm assuming the budget's already in, isn't it? So we could put some in there. I mean, this is really a high priority because everything else tips over with.
Well, it ended up being the top priority on our research to be done.
So we need to find a way to get this money. And then the player version, is it going to go online?
That it can be. Yep. The intent.
Because that's one of the things we said we would do, is so other people can play with it, is get that player version online.
Right. The player version, well, and actually we gave you the full version. And the player version right now is a 1 gigabyte zip file. And the idea is, because it really includes, it allows you to change everything. So the thought in the next phase was that we would, through the sensitivity analysis, we would identify, okay, well, which variables do we not really need to worry about?
Maybe roll that into this concept of how do we get it rolled out. Okay, thank you.
Leland, did you make a motion that we encourage the agencies to put together a funding plan?
I made that motion that we encourage the agencies to get a plan to get the model rolled out, completed, and verified, and then to doing the sensitivities.
Second.
Second, thank you.
Any debate or discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Great, nice to see that project through to the end. All right, thank you very much, Jeff. Appreciate it. Sorry to rush you there.
I left the graphics, by the way. I don't know the source of it. But.
Yeah, great graphic. Okay, so we had no public comments, although we've had a few during discussion. Thank you for participating. Member recommendations and actions on the key elements of the agenda, rather than defer action as we've often done. We've done it as we've come along on those issues. But I'll open the floor to discussion of any other topics members would like to talk about or any other recommendations. Things you'd like to talk about in future meetings. It sounds like our September meeting's pretty full. I will tell you that we do have an outstanding invitation, thanks to Jeff, to try to get North Shore Rock, who has a project plan for a promontory point, to come and make a presentation. Trying to work with their schedule to make that work. Our next meeting is September 13th, which is the second Wednesday of September rather than the first. And we're planning to meet at Antelope Island State Park. Unless you don't want to. Great. Any other comments? Dan?
We're going to put the elections up for next year.
Next meeting. Yeah. Thank you very much for being here. It's great to have a good group, and especially thank you to have 10 out of 11 council members. I really appreciate it. And if my clock is right, if my clock is right, I can entertain a motion to adjourn and we'll be out of here on time. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Get your name on the list if you want.
I was a little scared.